to the best of the church's music for the season of Lent at LutheranPublicRadio.org. Sacred music for the season of Lent, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
They are trying to recover their credibility. They told everyone that Donald Trump was a clown and couldn't get elected. And when he did, it showed that the media just, by and large, didn't know what they were talking about.
The more money we spend, the more programs that we create to try to substitute for mothers and families, the more we actually displace mothers, fathers, and families from each other.
If you don't want to do what the Bible says, that it's a you problem and not a problem with the Bible.
Really, the entire purpose of the incarnation itself is the infinite joining the finite.
Hi, this is Dan up in Washington State. I'm a Lutheran luthier, which means I make guitars, and I love to listen to Issues, etc.
Well, like most of what I read when I was young, I did not appreciate it when I first read it. Having returned to it when I was full grown, having raised children and a grandfather, and read it again, I was stunned at what I had missed. It was nothing other than The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn by Mark Twain. It launched me into a reading of everything that Twain ever wrote, and that was rewarding in and of itself. The book is iconic. It's classic. Ernest Hemingway said that all American literature begins with that one book by Mark Twain, Huckleberry Finn. Why did he say that? More importantly, why are New Jersey lawmakers trying to ban Huckleberry Finn? They wouldn't be the first, but their reasoning is somewhat different than previous bans. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. live on this Wednesday afternoon, April the 3rd. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to talk about an attempt by New Jersey lawmakers to ban Huckleberry Finn. Cheryl Magnus of The Federalist will be our guest. We'll review the movie Dumbo with Pastor Ted Geese. After that, it is a, I was going to say live action, it's live action with CGI remake of that classic Disney animated film. Dr. Jacob Corzine joins us after that. We'll talk about the two natures of Christ in the Lord's Supper, how the incarnation, the crucifixion, the Lord's Supper are all connected together. What you believe about one is going to lead you to believe something about the other two as well. Then we'll go through listener email and the Issues Etc. comment line, that email address, talkback@issuesetc.org, and the comment line 618-223-8382. Joining us to talk about an attempt by New Jersey lawmakers to ban Huckleberry Finn, Cheryl Magnus, managing editor of The Reporter Online for the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, and author of a recent column for The Federalist titled New Jersey Lawmakers Ask Schools to Ban Huckleberry Finn. Cheryl, welcome back.
Hi, Pastor. Thank you for having me back.
Why are New Jersey lawmakers attempting to ban Adventures of Huckleberry Finn?
Well, from what I've read, the attempt was prompted by an instance of some racially motivated bullying in one of the New Jersey public schools. There was no connection to the book and what happened, but I think maybe we have a case of lawmakers just wanting to send a message, wanting to appear to be doing something. And so Huckleberry Finn is kind of an easy target for them. The resolution actually reads that the novel's use of a racial slur and its depictions of racist attitudes can cause students to feel upset, marginalized, or humiliated, and can create an uncomfortable atmosphere in the classroom. So even though there's really no connection here, I think the book just is an easy target for them.
Has this book been a target by book bannings, book censors in the past?
It has, a number of times in the past. Interestingly enough, when the book first came out, I think it was published in 1885, almost immediately there were a few attempts to ban the book, either from libraries or from school reading lists. And the reason back then, though, was not because of the supposed racist element, but because of the bad grammar, because the book uses a lot of local dialect. And so it was just seen as modeling not very good speech, and perhaps just some cruder, rougher elements of the story. But in more recent years, the objections have been because the book does make use of a derogatory term with the N-word. many times throughout the course of the book. And I understand that. It's a terrible word, but it needs to be read within the context of the story. And the story is realistically painting that time in history. It's telling a story that was pre-Civil War time, you know, when slavery is just a given of the society at that time. So the language reflects that. But the use of the word in the book does not make it a racist book at all. In fact, it's a completely anti-racism book.
You note that author Ernest Hemingway had said all modern American literature comes from one book by Mark Twain called Huckleberry Finn. Why do you think Hemingway said this?
I think probably because it's just so American. It's also just a strong break with the preceding literary period, which would have been Romantic, Victorian style literature. And Huckleberry Finn is completely different from that. It's a realistic piece of writing. It's a very American piece of writing. It makes use of American settings, American characters, American dialect. And so it's just very American. Of course, Ernest Hemingway was an American writer, so he just believed that American writers owed an awful lot to Twain.
For listeners who may not be familiar with Twain's book or whose memories of it are very, very dim, refresh our memories and tell us about the book.
Well, I think it's often thought of as a children's book with a title like The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn. And people think of it as a companion to The Adventures of Tom Sawyer. But it really is much more than that. Huck is a character in The Adventures of Tom Sawyer. He's Tom Sawyer's friend. But he's a less important character in that book. Adventures of Huckleberry Finn is all about Huck. It's told from the point of view of Huck. Huck tells the story in first person. So at the opening of the book, he reminds the reader that at the end of Tom Sawyer, he and Tom found a large sum of money that had been hidden in a cave by some robbers. They were allowed to keep and to split that money. And as a result, Huck's father, his abusive father who had deserted him, Huck is without a father all through Tom Sawyer, and it comes back into the picture because he's interested in the money. But he's not a good guy. He beats Huck, treats him badly, and so Huck decides to hatch an escape plan. So he fakes his own death, and he sets off down the river. He runs into a runaway slave, Jim, who is also running away. And so they pair up and have this adventure down the river. So it's really two books. It's about this relationship between Huck and Jim and their friendship and how they change. And it's also a story of many adventures that happen as Huck periodically goes ashore as they're journeying down the river. Typically, those shore visits are reflections of just a lot of brutality, a lot of bad behavior. It's an opportunity for Twain to satirize a lot of things that he disliked about American society.
What was your classroom experience like with Huckleberry Finn as both a student and as a high school English teacher?
I first read Huckleberry Finn when I was a junior in high school and was taking American Lit. I went to school in a very small Texas town, definitely a diverse classroom, and I had a great teacher, probably one of the reasons that I decided to go into English. And we just had a wonderful time reading the story and talking about the story. I read the book again when I was in college, and then as a student teacher teaching Huckleberry Finn, and then a number of times over the years after that as I had the opportunity to teach the book in the classroom as an English teacher. And never in any of those times did we ever have any issues, you know, any parents objecting, any students objecting. I think it's just all a matter of how you approach the book and making very clear at the outset that there is going to be language in the book that is offensive to us today, but it's important to still read the story and to read that within the context of the time that it was written.
What about the book, in your mind, makes it required reading, especially now?
Well, one of the things I talk about in the article is that Twain himself described the book as representing a conflict between what he called a sound heart and a deformed conscience. And he said that in this book, those two things come into collision and conscience suffers defeat. Now, when we hear the word conscience today, I think we tend to think of, you know, this little small inner voice that tells us right and wrong. But Twain was referring to conscience as something that is formed by the society. So in his mind, Huck has a sound heart. Huck, deep down, knows right from wrong, but his conscience has been deformed so that when he looks at a black person, he does not see a human being, he sees a slave. So the book really brings that to sort of a climax in chapter 31, when Huck is faced with the opportunity to turn Jim in, Jim, who is running away from the authorities. And he strongly believes that the moral thing for him to do, the right thing for him to do, is to turn in the runaway slave. But he can't bring himself to do it. So he decides against doing that. And he believes that in making that decision, that he's going to hell. He tears up the letter that he's written and tosses it aside and says, all right, I'm going to hell, because he equates God's law with society's law. And of course, as Lutherans, we understand that those two things don't always go in sync with one another.
What does the book provide for students, even more basically, in by the way of a moral framework for life?
You know, it's not a Christian book. As Christians, as Lutherans, we look to God's Word to provide that moral framework for us. And, you know, we don't have that in Huckleberry Finn. But we see in the book the conflict between that moral compass that each of us has, even if we don't acknowledge it, even those of, you know, people that don't believe in God, it's still there because it's written upon our hearts, the difference between right and wrong. And so the conflict between that and between a society that is sending completely different messages about right and wrong is played out in the book around the subject of racism. And of course, we don't have racism within our society today, but we have all kinds of other issues around which we get mixed messages from the society regarding what's right and what's wrong. So we have a culture that tells us that abortion is okay, that assisted suicide may be a way to show mercy. Society tells us that there are more than two sexes and that we can go back and forth between them. We can just decide to be something different than what God made us to be. And so all of these things are kind of the deformed conscience that our society is giving us. And like Huck, we need to look elsewhere for the truth because the culture is not telling us the truth.
Why does the relevance of Huckleberry Finn endure the way it has?
I think for American readers, and go back to what I mentioned earlier, it's just a quintessentially American book. It's all about, you know, adventure and lighting out for the territory and the pioneer spirit and individuality and freedom and all of these things that we associate with being Americans. It's got great humor. It's got great social satire. It's a book about characters that, if you read the book, you will find yourself caring deeply about, and characters that learn and grow in their individual understanding and also in relationship with one another. So it just has all of these things that wonderful classic literature has that draw us to reading good classic literature. It's universal in its themes and helps us to think about important things. And for all of these reasons, we need to keep reading it and not throw it away simply because it has some uncomfortable truths and some uncomfortable language.
I was required to read Huckleberry Finn as a kid, like most kids were. Then I didn't pick it up again until I was in my early 50s, I believe. And I just thought, I'm going to read through everything Mark Twain has ever written.
Mm-hmm.
And started with The Adventures of Tom Sawyer and then moved on to Huckleberry Finn. And I became convinced reading it with an adult's eyes that it's not a children's book. It's like To Kill a Mockingbird. It's told mm-hmm. from a child's mind, but it is a thoroughly adult take on the world. And I wonder if that's part of the reason it is still valued as a teaching tool and ought to be valued as a teaching tool for our kids.
I think so. You're exactly right. You know, each time you read it, it hits you in different ways. And I think you really do have to be an adult to fully understand it. Twain uses something known as the innocent eye narrator. And so Huck is this innocent eye looking and describing the things that he sees. He often doesn't fully understand what he's seeing or what he's describing. And yet the adult reader sees all kinds of additional things in the description that Huck doesn't even realize are there. So much of the humor comes from that innocent eye. You know, Huck is describing something very matter-of-factly, and we as the reader just see hysterical things that he's not even aware of.
Finally then, Cheryl, if you were given an opportunity to just have 5 minutes of the time of those lawmakers in New Jersey who are contemplating banning this American classic, really this kind of unreproducible event in American literature, what would you say to them?
I think the best thing I could do would be to have them sit down and just open the book with me, and let's go and read a few passages of the book that really drive the point home that this is not a racist book. It's anything but. There's a scene in the book where Huck and Jim, they've already started their journey down the river. They get lost in the fog. They get separated from one another. And they're separated for, I think, you know, overnight at least, a good part of the night. They manage to find each other again. And when they do, Huck plays this really mean little boy trick. He shows back up on the raft and Jim is sleeping. And Huck, when Jim wakes up, Huck just pretends that nothing ever happened. He just acts like we didn't get lost from one another and pretends it was all a dream. And then finally, Jim realizes that Huck is kidding with him. And Jim stands up to Huck. And, in the context of the time, with Jim being a slave and Huck being a white person, even a poor white person, it took a lot of guts for Jim to stand up to him. But he basically said, you know, you're trash for treating me like this. How dare you do this? And Huck has a moment where he feels bad, as he should. He goes away for about 15 minutes, maybe to the other side of the raft, and he says that it took about 15 minutes before I could do it, but I went and I humbled myself and I apologized. And so Huck is learning from this experience to see Jim as not a slave, as not an N-word, but as a human being. And it's a revelation to him. And that scene alone is just a great illustration of the power of the book and, you know, the truth of the deformed conscience and the realization that just spending time with people and getting to know them, you know, can help undeform that conscience.
Cheryl Magnus is managing editor of the Reporter Online for the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. She's author of a recent column for the Federalist titled New Jersey Lawmakers Ask Schools to Ban Huckleberry Finn. You can read it under the Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org. Thanks, Cheryl.
Thank you.
We will be reviewing the movie Dumbo with Pastor Ted Geese on this Wednesday afternoon, April the 3rd, right after the break.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
An average of 20 military veterans kill themselves every day. Project Operation Barnabas is a network of LCMS congregations who reach out to veterans in their congregations and their communities with the gospel of Jesus Christ. Operation Barnabas is a program of LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. Find out more at lcms.org/armedforces. Serving those who serve. LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. lcms.org/armedforces.
Where Christianity meets culture, you're listening to Issues, Etc. Trinity Lutheran Church in Vilonia, Indiana, is a mighty fortress that stands as a bulwark against the attacks of the devil, the world, and our sinful flesh. We are located in Jackson County, about 2 miles south of historic Fort Vilonia on State Road 135. Join us every Lord's Day for Sunday school and Bible class at 8:30 and divine service at 9:30. Come and receive the gifts of forgiveness, life, and salvation from God's Valiant One, Jesus Christ, who has conquered death and holds the field forever.
Remember when education was about the fundamental skills of reading, writing, and arithmetic? And about reading great literature and studying history to give our kids a model for what it is to be a good person? Memoria Press's classical Christian curriculum offers that very model for your homeschool. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR9. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.